It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Over a year and a half after the resignation of Nate Harper, Pittsburgh finally has a new police chief. Pending city council approval, he is 56-year-old Cameron McLay, who has been serving as a leadership development consultant for the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Mr. McLay is a former police captain in Madison, Wisconsin, and while he has 35 years of police experience, he has never been a chief of police. So why was McLay chosen, and will his hiring satisfy critics in the community who feel Pittsburgh needs a more diverse police department? I'm joined now in Studio A by Pitt Law Professor David Harris, a member of the Police Chief Screening Committee and frequent guest on this program. David Harris, welcome back.
Good to be with you again, Paul.
And also with us is Tim Stevens, Chairman and CEO of the Black Political Empowerment Project and co-convener of the Greater Pittsburgh Coalition Against Violence. Tim Stevens, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good to be here always.
David Harris, let's begin with you. Since you were on the screening committee, why Cameron McLay, a middle-aged white man from a predominantly white area of the Midwest, to be the new police chief in Pittsburgh?
Well, I think because both the mayor and the people of Pittsburgh and the police department were looking for the best leadership they could find. Race of this particular person or gender were secondary considerations. What we're looking for is the highest quality person. You probably know that we did meetings in each of the six police zones in which we heard very, very strongly from members of the community who attended and made their thoughts known through a process of deliberative democracy. We also got the thoughts of members of the FOP who met, and we know that what everybody was looking for were what was a leader who could rebuild the trust between police and those they served, who had extensive community policing experience, who was good at using evidence-based strategies, and who could develop a diverse police force suitable for a city like ours. And Cameron McLay was one of the candidates who was at the absolute top of the heap with all of those qualities.
What impressed you about Cameron McLay?
Well, from everything I could tell, the man just lived and breathed community policing. When I say that, I mean it gets tossed around as a phrase. This man understood how important it is for police to be connected in a very positive way as partners with members of the community. Because if you don't have that, you don't have communication. You don't have communication, the police are fighting with one hand tied behind their backs. He understood how that makes for better crime fighting and for better relationships. Relationships are the foundation of the whole thing. He also was the most experienced. I know there was talk at the beginning at the top about whether he'd been a chief. He'd certainly had command positions, but he was experienced using his skills to get his officers connected with members of the community and to teach his officers to be problem solvers. So if you had the same location, an address, a liquor store, whatever it was, that had been the source of many complaints over a period of 2 weeks or a month, he would assign officers to figure out what the problem was and how to solve it. Don't just go there and arrest the guys you find on the corner. You go there and you figure out what the problem is. So he's a problem solver. He's good with data. And he's really good and has a deep understanding of what it means to be connected with the people you serve.
He has never been a police chief, though. Is that a handicap?
I don't think so, because he's held command positions now for years with the police department in Madison. The Madison Police Department is one of the best in the country. It's well recognized as such. It's a city that's nearly the same size as ours, not quite as big. But he has held a variety of positions within his police department, both commanding others, handling budgets, member of the SWAT team. I mean, he's a cop's cop. In addition to being at the forefront of thinking on leadership, he teaches leadership for the International Association of Chiefs of Police. I mean, the guy's the whole package. He wasn't the only good candidate we saw. There were many who were very good, but this man just rose to the top, and the mayor had the final choice, of course, along with the public safety director.
Tim Stevens, David Harris just mentioned the acclaim that has come in the direction of the Madison Police Department. It's been recognized for doing a great job of controlling crime and dealing with issues in that area. and he seems to have, Mr. McClay does, impeccable credentials, but he's moving from a city that has a black population of 7% to one whose population is 27%. Mm-hmm. What, if any, concerns does this raise for you?
I'm going to give the man the benefit of the doubt as he begins. Obviously, that 20% gap could be significant, but one thing I was very glad to read from his profile was from a community activist, a community organizer, Abha Erkar, I-H-A-K-K-R, from the Northside newspaper, and that's not Northside Pittsburgh, but in Madison. And he said, I'll read this. Cam embodies community policing values in his style and approach to every situation. He was incredibly good at building relationships, particularly in low-income, high-risk communities with people who have very little reason to trust police officers. It was masterful to watch. Now, that's a very powerful statement. If anyone said that about any police chief candidate who was looking to deal with the diverse issues, as in Pittsburgh, I think they would be highly happy to hear that description of them. And I think that's the kind of individual that we need. I was talking to Valerie Dixon last night, who was part of the team with David Harris, and I wanted to commend the mayor, Mayor Bill Peduto, and our safety director, Stephen Bucar, who's only been on the job since around late June, for having the wisdom to have those community meetings in the six zones and getting community input. First of all, I thought that was sending a signal to our citizens that hopefully we're creating a new day in Pittsburgh. The fact that the mayor has appointed the former Citizens Police Review Board chair as the head of OMI, Office of Municipal Investigation, and the former legal counsel for CPRB to be the solicitor for the city of Pittsburgh, and now OMI is under that solicitor, Lourdes Sanchez Ridge, also sends a new signal. So in this case, the credentials that this man seems to have, and here's a quote from him: "I intend to be very visible, very engaged, and very transparent." And that's the kind of chief of police that we would need in our city. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because the team that was put together that went over the resumes, I personally highly respect. They had a great mix of people on that team. And I also want to commend the mayor for not going beyond and outside of the recommendations that the team gave. So it wasn't a paper act just to say we tried to get involvement from the people, but we had to go outside of that process. He used the process, and according to Ms. Dixon, when I spoke to her last night, she said apparently he was high on the ratings of all of the committee.
And I want to get into how some of the process works, but you when you talk about transparency, what is the transparency that we need to see within and without the police department in Pittsburgh?
Well, I think that when Mr. McClay takes office, what is it, September 15th? Once he gets his feet wet, hopefully, and we will encourage that from the Black Political Empowerment Project and Coalition Against Violence, is to have some community meetings himself with the community and with those who are sometimes directly affected by the negative interactions. We had a meeting for an hour and 15 minutes with Stephen Bucar last week, Black Political Empowerment Project, with Esther Bush from the Urban League, and Rick Adams from Western Pennsylvania Black Political Assembly, and Rob Conroy and Shannon Williams from Ceasefire and other groups. We had an hour and 15 minutes going over our 20-point letter that we sent to the mayor and the safety director on June 25th, plus six other points regarding the police. And Mr. Bucar agreed to have a follow-up meeting with the new chief involved to review. And these are thoughts and issues that we've been dealing with literally for years, including the implementation of legislation that the Black Political Empowerment Project, the Black and White Reunion, later on the Alliance for Police Accountability, ACLU, helped to produce. And we want to make sure all this legislation is being implemented. And I think part of the transparency that the new chief can bring is, are we doing what we said we would do and will do?
And so it's about being held accountable.
And having open communications with the community and finding some new and creative ways to find and build that relationship. And this is what I'm hoping that this gentleman from Madison stated, was a quality that is important and very much needed. With all the negative interactions that have happened, particularly between the young black citizens of Pittsburgh and the police force, which has become more and more white in the recent maybe 15 years. We're down to single digits in the last 15 years of hiring.
And I think there's been some important concerns raised about that before this hiring and questions that linger after. It's mm-hmm. Essential Pittsburgh. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our guests are Pitt Law Professor David Harris and Tim Stevens, Chairman and CEO of the Black Political Empowerment Project. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. What do you think about the choice of a new police chief for Pittsburgh? Are you happy with the announcement yesterday? Are you concerned? Are you taking a wait-and-see attitude? 412-246-2002 to join the conversation. And I was talking earlier about some of the concerns that have been raised in the community, and I'm guessing that each of you has probably seen the op-ed expressed by Salahuddin, who I think echoes the comments of a lot of folks. This was prior to yesterday's announcement, but he asked the question that is on the minds of many when he wrote, "When are we in Pittsburgh going to finally solve the elusive challenge of diversifying the Pittsburgh Police Department? Is this a task for the new police chief? And if so, how does he go about it?" David.
It is an important task that is on the table right now. We did have here in Pittsburgh one of the most diverse police departments in the country not long ago. That was the result, as it was in many cities, of court decrees back in the 70s and 80s that required the hiring of a diverse force of high quality. Those decrees and that law really has lapsed. And with that, there has been a change in the way that officers have been hired. And what we are seeing now in Pittsburgh, but in many other places, is a wave of retirements of that cohort of people who were hired back then as they age out of the working force. And because of that, diversity is dropping precipitously. There is litigation right now that is in the pipeline on this issue. I have no knowledge or comments about that. But there has been reporting over the last week or so that that is reaching some kind of a critical stage. And I'd have to think that as much as we heard over and over in the process that diversity was an important thing the community wanted considered, that it was important for the police department to be able to move ahead, and that it was always at the top of the agenda for Mr. McClay when he was in Madison, I have to think we're going to see some movement on that.
The truth of the matter is when Nate Harper was here, we had some meetings. Gail Moss, she was president of the NACP, Esther Bush, president of the NACP of Urban League. And by the way, Esther Bush and I spoke last night. She called the interim president of the Madison, Wisconsin Urban League. And he spoke very, very highly of Cameron McClay and said that we had chosen well. So that means something to me when I hear that from Esther Bush, from her cohort. I just wanted to mention that.
And I'm sorry, go ahead, Tim. Yeah,
so the issue of diversity has been an ongoing conversation. I mentioned when I met with Nate Harper some time ago and with Esther Bush and Gail Moss, I asked him following the meeting would he give me the statistics of the last number of classes. At the point, he gave me, I think, 10 or 11 classes. They were in single digits in terms of the African-American representation. This last year, I believe, there are no African-Americans, males. And in 2012, there may have been one. That's not going to make it. And I know that the city administration, this new administration, is feverishly looking at new and creative ways to add diversity. But because the numbers have been so low, it would almost be a dramatic program to impact the numbers. And it may take another legal action to really break through. When we had the that was initiated by the NAACP, Women Now, National Organization of Women, and the Guardians of Greater Pittsburgh in the late 70s. And that produced the need to, or the requirement of hiring one black and one female out of every four. At one point, I understand that the city of Pittsburgh had one of the highest percentages of women on the police force across the country. And we had a very reasonable percentage of African Americans relative to our population. Once that decree went away, so did the presence of African Americans in any significant numbers. I call it the rewhitening of the Pittsburgh police force. And that's just what happened. And this is not the consent decree that the NAACP initiated when I was president. That led to the consent decree of 97, which led to a lot of the changes that have occurred since. But this was the Weber consent decree.
So you're saying that when –
that went away many years ago.
Right. So as far as diversity on the police force, that we're going in that area, and to the extent that it's important, and many people feel that it is that we're going backward.
We're absolutely going backward.
In the city of Pittsburgh.
And we can't remove race from – I mean, some people say, I don't see race. I think they're not being realistic. If a black person walks into this room – now, some of us, you know, because of our complexion being from very light to very dark black, we may confuse people, some of us. But if a very dark person walks in the room and it's all white people, let's say, they know a black person walked in the room. If it's all black people sitting there and a white person, obviously a white person walked in. We know a white person walked in. That doesn't make them wrong or right. It makes them who they are. But to not acknowledge that race is present is not being realistic. And in emotional situations of when you have upsets in the community, and right now in Homewood when you have an incident, it's almost like a white occupation force coming in to deal with a situation with guns and violence and
well,
and emotions.
We heard that with regard to Ferguson.
Absolutely.
The same words
absolutely.
That you're using.
You can't escape the emotions of that.
No, absolutely not. And that does factor into the broader conversation. We need to take a break. We are talking about one day after the hiring of a new police chief in Pittsburgh about who Cameron McLay is, what he brings to the table, the concerns that exist in the community. And we're taking questions from our callers when we get back. We'll be joined by Kenneth on the north side, Aaron in Pittsburgh. You can join us at 412-246-2002. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. And we are talking about the hiring of a new police chief in Pittsburgh, the announcement coming yesterday, pending city council approval, 56-year-old Cameron McLay, who has been serving as a leadership development consultant for the International Association of Chiefs of Police and is a former police captain in Madison, Wisconsin. A man with 35 years experience is taking over for the first time in a position as chief of police. He is taking that position here in the city of Pittsburgh. We're getting your reaction. And here with us in Studio A, David Harris, Pitt Law Professor, and Tim Stevens, who is chairman and CEO of the Black Political Empowerment Project and co-convener of the Greater Pittsburgh Coalition Against Violence. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. And let's go to Kenneth on the north side. Kenneth, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for holding, and go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, first of all, hello, Tim and Professor Harris. I know both of you.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
I'm glad you're on today. The biggest challenge, the biggest opportunity facing the new police chief will be the upcoming negotiations between the city of Pittsburgh and the Fraternal Order of Police. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to have a restructuring of the Pittsburgh Police Department, that's really the critical document, I believe, to making that happen. I've been asking Bill Peduto at meetings with BPEP and others to please eliminate overtime and secondary employment for police officers. Right now, we have a situation where, you know, probably the majority of police officers are looking at 60 to 70 hours a week of police employment. And I think that's a huge part of the problem. What we want, I think, is a situation where they work 40 hours a week and they go home. And if they have a second job, they're making burgers or making pizza or working with kids. But 40 hours a week standard of police time would be a huge change, and it would allow us to hire many more police officers and to address the diversity question.
Let's let David react to the first part of what you just said, Kenneth.
Kenneth, I have to disagree. I don't think they can or would actually want to eliminate secondary employment. I think what is reasonable is to have good control over the systems for it, and we saw how that failed under Chief Harper, and to limit it in ways that don't allow the secondary employment to become the actual primary employment,
right,
but to become something that is done on occasion and not as the primary target of somebody's money-making activities. So I do think that there's a place for that, but the place for it has to be limited.
And I think from and Kenneth, we've talked about this a bit, but I think from the realistic side, you're not going to eliminate secondary employment of police officers. That's just not going to happen. Politically, that's not going to happen. But what David said, I think, is something that certainly should be in the mix of conversation.
Let's go to thank you, Kenneth. Appreciate your question. Let's go to Aaron in Pittsburgh. Aaron, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Aaron.
Sorry, real quick. Pittsburgh has a bit of a history with corruption in the government. And so I don't want to insult anybody, but the question has to be asked, what have you guys done in terms of making sure that this guy, I mean, he's coming from Wisconsin, so I'm assuming he doesn't have any games running right now because he just got here, but you know, that he's going to stay clean.
Well,
and I can take my hands off. Yeah,
okay, Aaron, and David was on the, David Harris, one of our guests, was on the screening committee, so I'm sure that had to have come up.
Yes, it did. All of the candidates that made it to the mayor, when things got serious with them, they all underwent a very extensive set of background checks, everything from personal credit histories to actual criminal background checks, both nationally, federally, and statewide in Wisconsin in Mr. McClay's case. So it was very extensively checked out. It isn't that something couldn't be hidden in there somewhere, right, but I feel pretty confident. When there has been a real public issue involving one candidate or another, the members of the screening committee, reading the all the materials, were free to just plug in a Google search. And there was more than one time when we saw a candidate and we thought, maybe not, whether it was having a criminal record or not. So we were very careful. Everybody's success here depends on the success of the new chief. So we all want that person to succeed. We don't want any stone left unturned, and I'm fairly confident that it was done that way.
Were there actually candidates that had criminal records?
No, nobody had a criminal record, but sometimes there would be something that would catch your attention and the news media got a hold of it, and it was something that caused a kerfuffle or a stir or a problem for that person. And we wanted to know what was out there in terms of what we were sending to the mayor. We wanted to make sure that all the choices were strong choices, and I think we succeeded.
Also, part of the profile given us on Cameron McClay is his work in leadership development for the International Association of Police, Chiefs of Police, that David referred to earlier, an instructor in ethical leadership, and also a specialist in organizational leadership, community policing, and a use of force. And again, that use of force has been a big issue in Pittsburgh. So hopefully his background and along with the background check that was made, that we will not have those issues.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation here on Essential Pittsburgh with David Harris and Tim Stevens. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Let's go to Marvin in Squirrel Hill. Marvin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, I'm calling to get a clarification of the statement that the new police chief is described as community-oriented. In my opinion, and the opinion of many, many other people, if the new candidate does not support the concept that all police officers should maintain their residence within the boundary of the city of Pittsburgh, if he or she does not support that concept, he or she is not a community-oriented candidate. Could I ask for a clarification from the panel of that point? point.
Well, certainly, Marvin and David, is that a question that came up? I'm sure it did.
Yes, it did. That came up during several of our zone meetings, and opinions among the screening committee were divided. But I have to tell Marvin that this isn't really up to the police chief. There was a legal ruling. There was an arbitration. The city is working to appeal that, if I understand things correctly. But it isn't in the hands of the police chief, and so that won't be an issue for Mr. McClay as the chief. As far as being community-oriented, it isn't the question isn't necessarily where do you live, because plenty of officers live in Pittsburgh, but they don't police the areas that they live in. You could live in Zone 1 and work in Zone 5, and those things may be very different. Mm-hmm. The question is, are you connected to the community? Are you invested in it? Do you have partnerships and strong relationships there? Do you know the people you police? Do you know who to talk to? That's community-oriented policing. It isn't simply a matter of where you live.
I ran into Bill Peduto Saturday when he spoke at the event by Bill Marshall, William Marshall, B. Marshall, he's called. A community event on Monday, on the holiday, I'm sorry, Monday. And he was speaking to the community. And he mentioned to me the fact that there's some police beginning to walk the beat in Homewood. And I mentioned to him that Valerie Dixon, our vice chair of Black Political Empowerment Project, who was part of the team that David was and during the research on the candidates, I had mentioned that she had noticed that and others were noticing. So that's the beginning, hopefully, of a movement where people can begin to see the police outside of the vehicles, and if they're walking the streets, you have more opportunity to actually talk to people. And as I said,
well, this is something that Bill Peduto has said on this show. Okay. As mayor, he strongly favors is the cop walking the beat, mm-hmm. which it goes back to the way it used to be.
Yes.
He thinks a return to that is important. What you're saying, Tim, something you want to see more of?
Absolutely, because it begins an opportunity to communicate. My wife and I were talking this morning is, if you actually talk to people, normally they're not as bad as you may think. Now, it could be worse after you talk. but groups, you know, we talk about if the African-American kids are talking about the police and the police are talking about African-American kids, it's easy to paint everybody with the same brush. But if members of the FOP can sit down and have direct conversations with Black young people and Black young adults and vice versa, that will probably begin to break down bridges. And if or build bridges, I should say, and break down stereotypes. If officers are walking the beat and begin to talk to citizens of the community, hopefully the community begins to see them as part of the community, as David referred to, and not outsiders. Even if they live outside the neighborhood, hopefully if they're communicating with people on a daily basis, they become part of the community through that process.
And David, you just wrote about this in a piece for the New York Times in which you said that the police engaging people in the community and learning to view them more as partners as opposed to adversaries would solve a lot of problems.
Well, it certainly is the right beginning, and it gets you very, very far. And that's frankly the lesson of the whole of Chief-to-be McClay's career. As we learned about it, is that he understands this in a very, very deep way. And I've heard reports from folks in Homewood about how important they think it is that these officers are walking the beats. And the dividends, it's already paid, because when you have relationships with people as individuals, good things flow from that. And that sounds kind of soft next to our sort of tough guy conception of policing, but this is what people want. It works. We've seen it work. And frankly, it's what police officers want too. They want their job to be such that they have a connection with the people that they work for.
Let's go to Ted in Mount Washington, who would like to join the conversation. Ted, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Ted.
Real quick, I got two questions. One, will the DA, Stephen Cipolla, will he be involved in some of these community meetings? I think he's a key player in this, and I think he will benefit and the community will benefit. We had the DA also involved. Number two, I'm worried about the training. If you saw what happened to Ferguson, you saw a militarization of the police force, and using that kind of force on poor people frightens me. Are we going to know what does the police force have as far as training? And also, do they have any of that military equipment and what's it used for? I think that's very important for the future of Pittsburgh.
Very relevant question, Ted. So what will be the training for new Pittsburgh police officers. What do we know about that?
Well, we know that Chief McClay puts a very high premium on the right kind of training and discipline. He said this in his statements to the committee and his materials many times over. As far as the question of military equipment, we know that there is some of that in the Pittsburgh Police Department. We saw it with the G20 meetings back a few years ago. The one that I remember is the LRAD, the high frequency and high pressure sound machine. Mm-hmm. But there were other things too. So it is a question that is open now for our community to consider, just like communities across the country in the wake of Ferguson.
And that's one of the questions we raised with Stephen Buchar, the new director of public safety, in our last Thursday's meeting with the Black Political Empowerment Project, Urban League, and other groups, and to review, because, as I said, I think the presence of some of that militaristic look just incites people to respond in ways maybe they wouldn't have otherwise. Secondly, number 8 and 9 of our 20-point letter that we sent to the mayor on June 26th, 2014, and to Mr. Buchar, talks about provide training each year to all police officers to review search and seizure laws. Such training would be in addition to the annual mandated Pennsylvania State Police training, which may include various subject matter, meaning a specific focus, because a lot of times the interactions between the community and the police, particularly African-American males and the police, occur from search and seizure moments that maybe if they were handled differently would result in different results.
And there's been a debate about that in New York.
Absolutely, with the stop and frisk cases how often they happen, who they happen to, and how little they actually produce.
And that's a big deal that needs to be reviewed immediately.
Well, this has been a very enlightening conversation.
And increase in sensitivity training, in cultural training, because particularly as you have more whites working and less and fewer African Americans employed in the police force, that whole sensitivity issue and cultural awareness it has to be not just a passing conversation, but part of how people are trained.
Well, we'll keep the dialogue alive, certainly on this program going forward. But for now, we've come to time, and I want to thank Tim Stevens, Chairman and CEO of the Black Political Empowerment Project and co-convener of the Greater Pittsburgh Coalition Against Violence. Tim, thank you for being here.
Good to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
And Pitt Law Professor David Harris, a member of the Police Chief Screening Committee with regard to the hiring of the new chief, Cameron McClay. David Harris, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Paul. Good to be with you.
Coming up, what kind of Pittsburgh do you want? Economist Stephen Herzenberg joins us next on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.